William, appearing beside her. I couldn't see you in all the faces. Is Elsie with you? William was tall, slim, and had long limbs that had earned him the gangly name tag at school, but that he'd grown into as a 21-year-old, giving him the easy elegance of Jimmy Stewart. He had a heart-shaped face, pronounced by his wavy hair combed back from his forehead, and the fine vertical line that ran between his eyes, almost as if drawn on with a pencil. He had been courting Elsie for a year, and they made the most handsome, head-turning couple. "I thought she'd be with you," Audrey answered, standing on tiptoes to look for Elsie in the throng. "Oh, gosh, where is she? Maybe Beals wouldn't let her out. Her boss in the needlework department rules with an iron fist."
"You don't think she's had doubts about me?" he said. "Maybe I'm not as good at the mouth harp as I'd like to think."
William's harmonica was as much a part of him as his arm or leg. Where most men could be seen cradling a cigarette to their mouths, William's habit was playing the harmonica. During his breaks at the bakery, where he'd worked as an apprentice baker until now, he'd perch on one of the huge sacks of flour and play tunes that rivaled the songbirds. "Don't be daft," she said. "That's one of the reasons she fell for you. She says your heart beats to a Larry Adler tune. I'm going to miss listening to you play and..." Words failed her as she battled not to tell him how desperately worried she was about him going. She hugged him tight instead. William grinned, dipped into his pocket, and handed Audrey the battered red case of his M. Horner harmonica. "Can you give her this?" he asked. "Inside there's... well, it's not the most original thing, and it's not exactly a rock. I wanted to give it her myself and do things properly and take care of her like a husband should, but there's not enough time and the war won't wait." For a moment, despite his stature and dashing good looks, William seemed lost, like a 5-year-old boy on his first day at school. Audrey felt suddenly fiercely protective of him and held his face in her hands. "William," Audrey said, "I'll make sure she gets the ring. There's something I want to give you too." She placed the threepenny bit in his palm. "Can you remember when Mother used to put this in the plum pudding at Christmas? You bit into it one year and broke your tooth. It was supposed to bring us luck. Not that our mother has brought us much luck over the years, quite the opposite. But I've always kept this coin." The thought of their mother and the fact she wasn't there to wave William off like the dozens of other mothers on the platform infuriated Audrey. She smiled ruefully, and William laughed gently, tucking the coin into his breast pocket. He put his arm around her, and she resisted the temptation to cling onto his coat and not let him go. The trainmaster blew his whistle, and there was a sudden push towards the train doors, puffs of steam billowing into the rafters and scattering pigeons. "It'll be over by Christmas," William said, jumping onto the train and pulling shut the door. "And I'll join you for plum pudding," he called out above the din. "And tell my Elsie I'll marry her when I come home, if she'll have me."
"I will," said Audrey. "Farewell, William."
"Farewell, sis," he called, raising his palm. As the train moved off in a cloud of steam, a rousing chorus of male voices singing, "Homeland, homeland, when shall I see you again?" burst through the windows. Audrey waved until her body swayed with the force of it, not just at William, but at all the young men leaving their lives in Bournemouth for an uncertain future. Tears escaped her eyes, and she swiped angrily at them. She mustn't let William see her cry. Now, with the train gone, the station was eerily quiet, and Audrey walked slowly to the front of the building, lined with sandbags, with a heavy heart.
"Audrey!" she heard Elsie yell.
Audrey turned to see Elsie running towards her, overcoat hanging off her shoulders, stockings ripped at the knee, and with one of her smart work shoes in her hand. Her cheek and forehead were oil-streaked, and her breathing, as she stopped running and bent over to rest against her knees, was ragged.